This is Eddie Chang and Stephen Whitaker coming to you once again from Port Radio, WDOT. And we have with us right now Mrs. Gloria Glantz. She's a Holocaust survivor from Poland, and we have some questions for her.
Morning. I would like to start with the first question. Can you just briefly explain to us, can you just briefly tell us your life prior to this experience?
I can tell you very little about my life prior because I was very young and I was taken away to live with another family by the age of 3. So I can just tell you that I came from a very large family and I was born to my parents when they already had an 8 and 10 year old little boys. So I was really treated like a little princess. My mother was a teacher by training and had a beautiful voice, and I remember her singing lullabies to me. And I would beg her not to stop. And I remember playing hide-and-seek with my brothers, and because I was the littlest one, I could fit under the bed, which was the best hiding place. And then my idyllic life really ended when my parents realized that I couldn't be with them anymore or I would suffer the same fate as they eventually did.
So I understand you were sent to live with another family during the Holocaust. And where were you and what was life like with them?
My mother brought me to this Polish woman. Her name was Sonia Kowalczyk. And just walked out the door. As I was 3 years old, and as hard as I tried to follow her, I was restrained, and I was left with this woman whose husband was really my father's custodian, where my father had his leather factory in town. So that's how they knew the woman. The woman was very kind and patient and very good to me, and eventually I called her Matka. I called her mother. That's the Polish word for mother. And my life with her was very different because I had no toys. I had no friends. My pastime was picking wildflowers at the side of the road and making crowns for her and me. And I went to church with her, so I got a new name with her. I was no longer my original name, Gittel Szypiorka. I became a Polish little girl, Gucia Kowalczyk was my name. I went to church every Sunday, and I learned to pray in Polish to the Holy Mother. And because I spoke Polish fluently, I had no accent, no Yiddish accent, like most people in town actually did speak Yiddish, which would give you away if you had an accent. But my parents spoke to me in Polish, so I was very fluent in it. And I guess that really helped me to fool the Germans when they came in and flashed a flashlight in my face looking for Jews in the middle of the night. And I had to say my prayers for them.
Did you ever have any other kind of experiences with the Nazis other than the periodic checkup on you? Was there any real connection to the Holocaust where you were living?
I really didn't. I was too young to realize what was going on in the world. I had no idea about current events. Another time that something similar happened was the German soldiers came into the garden where I was playing one day. I was there with my Polish matka and her daughter, and I had to sing and dance for them because they said, show the soldiers how you sing and dance, and I did, and they could have eradicated my life then and there, but they didn't. They allowed me to live another day. Other than that, I had no direct contact with anything other than being hidden, had to follow the rules, be a nice Christian little girl.
So while you were in Poland, were you liberated by the Soviets, or?
Well, no, I didn't have to be liberated because I wasn't in a camp.
Right,
so I was with this woman until the end of the war, and actually she grew to love me so much that even though she had promised my parents that If somebody came to claim me from my family at the end of the war, she would give me up. She took me to a remote place, another town called Yelenagura, where there was a big windmill there, and in the hopes that I wouldn't be found, that I could stay with her. But I was found because one of my other aunts who survived, who jumped off a train on the way to the death camp, Treblinka, went to a displaced persons camp. And when she called out my aunt's name, my aunt who lived in America, she wanted to make contact with her. There was a soldier in the room, an American soldier, Phil Kaplan, who was the neighbor of my Aunt Esther and Uncle Max in New York. And so he sent a message that he found Mrs. Bernstein's sister, and her niece was also alive, meaning me. So she got the machinery running for, sent the American Jewish Committee to find me, and they did. And there was a long voyage. I couldn't come directly here. I had to make a few stops before that. I had to go to Sweden for a year, lived in an orphanage for a year, and then I had to live in Montreal before I could come to America. So it was a long, drawn-out kind of arrival to the American continent.
Now, when you were a very young girl, you had been a practitioner of the Jewish faith, I would think. And when you went to live with this family in Poland, you became a Christian. Did you ever convert back to your Jewish roots?
Are
you
Yes, still because a practitioner? When I lived in Montreal, I was supposed to be living with these people for 3.5 weeks until my immigration number came up. You know, there was a quota system in America. You couldn't come until... only a certain number of people from a specific place could come at a given time. And my aunt thought it would be 3.5 weeks, but it turned into 3.5 years. So the family that I lived with in Montreal was observant, very observant, and they had lots of family celebrations. They went to synagogue. I learned the music. I learned the liturgy. I embraced my Jewish religion again, and I am Jewish today.
Now, I also understand that you go to different community events and to schools and such, and you talk about tolerance and you talk about the Holocaust. And how has that been for you as an experience?
I feel compelled to do something with my experience. And there's so much intolerance in the world. And I feel the Shoah, the Holocaust, was really caused by hate and indifference. There was so much indifference. Hitler could not have done it alone. He could not have done it without the indifferent people or the collaborators. So I have developed some courses on tolerance. I also give workshops at the Holocaust Center in Glen Cove. I developed a course on the Holocaust, which I teach to teachers. And I've done, actually in this district, I've taught twice. I've taught in Manhasset, Oceanside, Islip, many districts on Long Island. I speak a lot to school groups, to adult groups. Yom HaShoah, the commemoration of the Holocaust, the past couple of weeks, as my son says, it's Mom, it's your busy season. I've been speaking like almost every day, once or twice, in the last 2 or 3 weeks. I hardly have a voice left. So, and I'm compelled to do this. I think it's important, and I want to leave the students with a message. And my message relating to my particular story is each of you can make a difference. Look what a difference one person made. And you are one person. And the Holocaust did not happen to 6 million, 12 million, 15 million. It happened to one person 15 million times. And it's the one person that's important. And you're one person, and you can make a difference, just the way my matka made a difference. So even if it just means tapping someone on the shoulder and saying, come have lunch with me, a person who's been isolated in school, or easing somebody's pain in some way. So that's my message, is you all can make a difference, each person.
Thank you so much for coming to interview with us.
Thank you, Mr. Glantz.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Eddie Chang and Stephen Whitaker. We'll be right back.